Thanks, blessings. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, March 26th, 2016. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabweans have been urged to unite in tackling fire brigade atrocities of the 1980s.
We need to make it clear that it's time this thing got addressed and those responsible have to come up.
Public floggings scare Zimbabweans living in Botswana.
I think flogging has its own advantages. It doesn't matter whether that Zimbabwean said, there's no exception for anyone. The law is the law.
And as usual, we will focus on women's issues. Stay tuned. Zimbabweans have been urged to unite in tackling fire brigade atrocities of the 1980s in order to bring closure to relatives of victims. Speaking in a Studio 7 political panel, Dr. Shepherd Mpofu of the University of Johannesburg and Reverend Ray Motsi of the Baptist Church say time has come for the nation to address this issue. At least 20,000 innocent civilians are believed to have died in the hands of the North Korean-trained fire brigade, which was deployed in the PF Zapu strongholds of Matabeleland and Midlands provinces to flush out so-called dissidents. The atrocities are commonly known as Gukurahundi, or washing away filth. Mpofu says the Zimbabweans have many options in tackling this issue.
We need, through legal processes, to set up a bill like Jonathan Moyo did. This bill can actually be sponsored by citizens and be pushed through as one other MP or whatever it is. And we need to make it clear that it's time this thing got addressed and those responsible have to come up. And I think if we are to be united as Zimbabweans and have, we need a system that has political repercussions. It's either we agree together that we're going to vote for a certain party or we're going to form or sponsor as citizens a certain party that will run with this. And if you look at even Mujuru's recently formed party, it's not clean of this thing, Eko Ground. We need a new dispensation. That's the only point where we can have a redress of this situation. Mm-hmm. But from where I am standing, ZANU-PF will continue in power and it will continue to ignore this issue. They can only pretend to attempt to address it, like the formation of the Ministry of Healing and Reconciliation. But was there any healing and reconciliation during that time? There wasn't. And now we need to even think beyond civic organizations because most of them have been around for a long time, but they've neglected this issue of the genocide. One is to ask, why has it been neglected?
Hey, Reverend Motsi.
Yes, I really do believe that the best way to actually deal with this is to actually find a way in which we begin to help the victims who are struggling, who are not able to move forward, even though there is no acceptance of the wrong on the side of ZANU-PF and those people that were responsible. We also need to find some psychosocial approaches in terms of development, building more schools in Matabeleland and providing some capital injection so that people of Matabeleland probably can begin to look after themselves rather than to continue to be marginalized. There's need for a proactive action to make sure that this region is taken care of.
Mm, you have the last word, Dr. Mpofu.
I think one of the most important things that we can do as Zimbabweans is to advocate and push that this issue needs to be addressed, this issue to be addressed. David Coltart has opened the way for us. Recently, he published a book, and Mnangagwa is claiming that he's misquoting him and he wants to sue him. And this is a point of departure for Zimbabweans. And if we miss this point, we might not even get it in the near future. Let's come out in the open. Reverend Motsi did his PhD on that. In my PhD, there are also issues that address the genocide. Let's have all the written things out. Let's have all the material out. Owen Masekwe is doing great works with his paintings of the genocide, and he's been exhibiting here in Joburg. And next time, I think he's going to Kenya if we succeed in having him in Kenya. We need people to be conscientized about the genocide. We need artists, we need journalists to start speaking about this and giving it prominence. Not only give it prominence when it's a sensational issue that somebody is going to sue someone. Let's have our journalists, let's have our artists, and everyone in the industry advocating for redress of this issue. Let's have academics, let's have churches coming out in the open and standing up tall and saying, let's address this issue once and for all.
That was Dr. Shepherd Mpofu of the University of Johannesburg. You also heard from Reverend Ray Motsi of the Baptist Church, who also wrote a PhD thesis on the fire brigade atrocities. President Robert Mugabe once described the massacres as a moment of madness. Zimbabweans living in Botswana say they support their government's effort to engage its neighbor on corporal punishment. Botswana regularly flogs transgressing Zimbabweans, particularly for border jumping and petty crime. Our correspondent Martin Ngwenya has more from the capital, Gaborone.
Zimbabwe recently engaged their Botswana counterparts with a view to stop the flogging of citizens in the neighboring nation. However, the Zimbabwe delegation, during a recent bilateral security meeting, failed to convince Gaborone authorities to stop the punishment. Zimbabweans who commit petty crime in Botswana are usually flogged and not given custodial sentence. Some Zimbabweans feel the practice is outdated and should be replaced with alternative punishment. Jafta Ndlovu says with some people suffering from various ailments, punishment through flogging might even cause health complications.
Zimbabweans, we don't support this thing of Botswana, of the Botswana system of caning or flogging like criminals as a way of disciplining them. I think they should come up with another alternative of like solving these issues of disciplining people. Because these days we have people who are sick, like with different diseases and illnesses, that can be a problem after facing such a situation of being disciplined in such a manner.
But another Zimbabwean, Farai Zerutwe, is of the view that although some are not comfortable with the practice, Zimbabwean must try and stay on the right side of the law to avoid falling victim to corporal punishment.
I would just want to encourage Zimbabweans that come here looking for jobs or for whatever reasons to make sure that their papers are in order to avoid this. Because in as much as we think we might say it's inhumane, it's backward, it's something that is to be provided for within the laws of the country.
Botswana nationals believe it is only appropriate to mete out the punishment to deter petty criminals, particularly Zimbabwean illegal immigrants accused of contributing to soaring crime in the country. Mompati Kinosi says Botswana laws are laws and need to be respected irrespective of nationality.
I think flogging has its own advantages. It doesn't matter whether they are Zimbabweans. There is no exception for anyone. The law is the law. And some of these minor crimes, we don't need to put people in jail for these minor crimes when they could be flogged.
Zimbabwe Republic Police Head of the Minerals and Border Control Unit, Ernest Muchekwa, recently told the media that they had held several meetings with their Botswana counterparts over the matter, but the practice had not stopped. Muchekwa says they have repeatedly impressed the need to observe human rights, but have been told that Botswana chiefs have a legal right to flog offenders. Offenders are often sentenced to anything between 6 and 12 cuts on the bare back, but children, women and men are over 40 are excluded. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Martin Gwenya in Gaborone, Botswana.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On World Water Day, March 22nd, the U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, launched USAID Lowland Wash, a new water, sanitation, and hygiene activity to support the government of Ethiopia's One Wash national program in pastoral areas of Afar, Somali, and Southern Nations, Nationalities, and Peoples regions. The new activity will increase the availability of improved, sustainable drinking water sources, increase access to better sanitation products and services, catalyze enhanced sanitation and hygiene behaviors, and build capacity for enhanced knowledge and data management, while also expanding sustainable water use for agriculture. In the near term, the activity will help respond to the current drought while working to build long-term resilience by helping communities to better manage and use their water resources. Given the magnitude of the current drought, the activity will prioritize well rehabilitation in acutely affected Cabelas. This, in addition to the nearly $10 million in humanitarian aid that the U.S. is providing to improve access to safe drinking water, rehabilitate water systems and sanitation infrastructure, and provide relief items like hygiene kits and water containers. Ethiopia has made dramatic strides over the last 15 years to increase access to improved water and sanitation. Speaking ahead of the launch, Christian Holmes, Global Water Coordinator for USAID, highlighted the importance of the work the new activity will undertake. Safe water and sanitation is what enables a child to grow, learn, and rise out of poverty. It is what keeps communities healthy. USAID's lead partner, AECOM International Development, will implement the $23.8 million activity in cooperation with CARE USA and the International Rescue Committee. Water is life, and the United States is proud to partner with Ethiopia in developing this essential resource for the benefit of all the people of Ethiopia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Listeners, please note the following frequencies effective Sunday, March 27th, 2016, that is tomorrow. Studio 7 radio broadcasts, that is Shona, English, and Ndebele, 15460 kHz shortwave, that is on the 19-meter band, 6065 kHz, 49-meter band, 4930 kHz shortwave. Then on the medium wave frequencies, 909 medium wave. And then for Studio 7 Live Talk, shortwave frequencies, 6065 and 15460 shortwave frequencies. And then the other one is 909 medium wave. And as usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight, we're gladly joined by Ruvimbo Tsopodzi, one of the two girls that challenged the government in court to outlaw early child marriages and won. Ruvimbo Tsopodzi was also married off at the age of 15, but managed after several years to go back to her parents and is now living at home and has gone back to school. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Ruvimbo Tsopodzi.
Oh, thank you very much.
Tell us about your life. What happened for you to be married off at the age of 15?
Oh, I was married at the age of 16. I was in Form 3, and then my father saw me coming back from school with a tie. I was not in love with this guy. He was asking me to be his girlfriend, but I didn't want to be his girlfriend.
So what happened after that?
What happened was I started staying with this guy, but before I started staying with this guy, my auntie went to talk to my father, but my father listened to her, and even my mother-in-law tried to talk to my father, but he didn't listen. So we started staying with this guy, but there was no love in that house. He was abusing me, doing all sorts of things to me, until I found out that this is not the real life that I wanted to have. This is not what I am supposed to be doing. And then I just woke up one day and I went to my father and I told him that this is not the life that I wanted, and he accepted me back home.
Do you have any children? What happened while you were staying? How long were you with your ex-husband?
So it was 2 years. My son is 3 years old now.
And you are one of the young ladies that took the government to court to challenge the law that now outlaws early child marriages. Tell us about that. What prompted you to do that?
Okay. Well, we met Beatrice Savagier, the director of Roots in Africa. So she just asked us that we should join her organization, and then we joined the organization. Unfortunately, Veritas was doing their researches in this world about girls getting married before the age of 18. So Veritas asked Beatrice for us to be in court challenging the child marriages act, the law that was in them that girls should be married at the age of 16. So we challenged that law very much, and then that is how we got into the court.
What would you like to see happen moving forward to prevent other children from being married off as child brides?
The girls should be educated about sex. they should not be people who don't value their bodies, because their bodies are very special. They should wait until they are ready to be married, not before the age of 18.
We understand also that you have gone back to school. Tell us about that.
Now I'm going back to school. I'm learning at Oxford College. My thesis is being paid by a lady called Shamiso Mazirire. She has an organization called Holding Hands.
What are you aspiring to be when you do finish school?
Oh, I want to be a lawyer.
Why?
So that I'll be someone standing up for women, especially women.
Do you have some parting words that you'd like to say to parents that may have their children that have been married off or that are going through what you went through? What's your word of advice to parents especially?
For the parents, I'd like to say, don't be someone who have so much emotions, because it won't help your child, because the child will go out there and bring a kid and you'll be the one suffering to take that kid into the house, take care of that kid, doing all everything for that kid. It is not right for you to have emotions on the things that are not happening.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Rivimbo Tsopodzi, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Okay, thank you very much to you.
Join me again next week when we'll look at other issues affecting women.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope to meet again on Saturday next week. Thank you. The music of Gospel Nation coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Now to recap today's top stories. Zimbabweans have been asked to unite in tackling five brigade atrocities of the 1980s. And public floggings are scaring Zimbabweans living in Botswana. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. Have a lovely, lovely Easter weekend. This is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C. Good night.